So I invite you to nestle in, and you might, again, gift yourself the choice of maybe taking a few moments, perhaps even a minute or more, with eyes open, you know, to practice tuning in to actually seeing the space you're sitting in and knowing you're seeing. There might be a tuning in to colors or shapes, the quality of light coming in through the window. Maybe there's even an awareness of certain objects moving, you know, in the wind, or maybe a pet walks through the space. So we can actually practice eyes open, and sometimes it's really helpful in the process of settling the nervous system, and sometimes it's also helpful as a reminder that awareness is not a quality that's linked to sitting still with the eyes closed. So and as you're looking, you might begin to see if you can also have an awareness of your body, a felt sense of your body sitting here. Sometimes the act of looking pulls us up and out of our bodies. So you might see if there can be an energetic relaxing back. And a looking, but not a grabbing hold with the eyes, almost like you're letting colors and shapes and sights come to you. And you can keep eyes open if that feels right to you, or you might explore softening the gaze and looking downwards towards your lap or towards the floor to simplify. To sort of narrow the gate of information that's coming in visually, and you may even choose to let the eyes close, completely releasing the pull of the visual world. So even with the eyes closed, there's often remains a sense of vision, a quality of light and shadow, or sort of that photo negative image of what was last seen on the insides of the eyelids, so to speak. So there may even be this halo of the experience of vision. And is that sense of vision perhaps fades away softens and dissipates. You might let your awareness come to rest at the doorway of the ears, the gateway to hearing. And allowing the experience of sounds arising and passing to offer you a sense of a wider awareness, just like the eyes often have a limitless awareness. We can see far into the distance. And then this realm of hearing is closer in, but still brings with it a spaciousness. And there might be sounds that you're aware of at a distance, a train whistle, or traffic noise, maybe a dog barking. There might be sounds that are closer in, the sound of bird song outside your window, or a wind chime. Maybe the hum of a refrigerator or the buzz of a light, the sound of my voice. And as you're tuning into this experience of hearing, notice if there's any reaching out for sounds or a leaning forward into the space, and see if there can be an intentional resting back. Maybe literally, but more likely energetically. So that you're simply here in the present moment, receiving sounds as they come and go. Letting hearing be easeful and without effort. you're not doing anything to make hearing happen. You're simply noticing sounds. Whenever they come into being, noticing the birth of a sound and maybe the duration it's here for, and maybe even noticing the moment it disappears. And as you continue this exploration of hearing, you might become aware of how much of our energy goes into trying to name a sound or to describe a sound. There's often a cascade of images or words that might come when sound happens, and you don't have to stop that. But you might have glimmers that this is actually something additional. To the bare experience of hearing. You don't have to have the label to have the experience of hearing. A sound could be received as volume, pitch, tone, is a simple vibration that the ear recognizes. And so you might just allow yourself to rest back a little more to see if that there can be less stickiness to the labels. They might come, but maybe they just slide right on through and you don't really get too interested in labels or descriptions, but you just keep resting back, ready to receive the next sound that might present itself. And as you're hearing sounds come and go, you might also become aware of the space between sounds. Sometimes there's actual stretches of silence between sounds. Sometimes there's a background sound that is rather continuous, but there's sounds in the foreground that come and go, and there's gaps between those sounds. So you're listening to the whole field of sound, the experience of hearing. Is made up of the sounds and the spaces between them. And if it's of interest to you, you might also just notice if there's any sense of spaciousness as you're resting back into hearing and receiving sounds. Any sense of how sounds come and go in space. And you might choose to continue practicing with hearing for the remainder of our time, or if you wish, you might let your awareness come into the body more fully. Not just through the gateway of the ears, but the felt sense of the body sitting here. Feet on the floor. Your butt on the chair or the cushion. Maybe feeling your hands in your lap or on your legs. Just noticing, what's it like to touch into a felt sense of the body at this point in your practice? Is the body at ease and relaxed? Are there pockets of tension or tightness? Is there any sense of the body sitting or resting in space? the body and all it contains. Held in a larger container. And you might see if something in the body draws your attention. Maybe it's a touch point. Maybe it's the perimeter of the envelope of the skin, that boundary between physical body and space. Maybe it's the breath. And just letting your awareness rest there for the final few minutes of our practice. Having taken some time to connect with sensation in the body, felt sense of the body, allowing your awareness to once again widen out into the space around you, opening up again to the experience of hearing. receiving sounds and the spaces between sounds. And as you're ready, beginning to open the sense gate of vision again, maybe beginning with a soft gaze downwards, just opening the eyes slightly in this way to take in light. Maybe sort of a hazy sense of vision. Letting a sense of the space around you begin to enter through the sense gate of the eyes. And as you are ready, perhaps opening the eyes more fully and once again taking a final minute here to engage in seeing meditation, noticing shapes, colors, the space that you are sitting in. Noticing if there can still be an awareness of the body as you invite sight back in. And as the formal meditation comes to a close, see what it's like to bring your eyes and ears back to the screen, along with your body, as we explore our topic for today. So a little bit of a different meditation that we might not, at first glance, think has anything to do with the topic of embodied equanimity or the heart qualities that we've been exploring. But last week we explored, as part of our compassionate response to loss and trauma, those different circles of engagement that the nervous system might inhabit, that circle of safety where we feel resourced and grounded, that circle of overwhelm where we've exceeded the threshold of our tolerance and we might feel dysregulated in some way. And then there was that zone in between where we could meet life's challenges with curiosity and capacity. And many of you named that that middle zone feels fleeting or elusive, hard to inhabit. And so today I wanted to just explore that a little bit more, because it is difficult. And I think the circumstances of our lives right now with the various demands of, the ongoing uncertainties of the pandemic, it's like, oh, the world's sort of opening up, but it's not. And, you know, people are getting shots, you know, vaccinations, but we don't quite know yet, like, really, what does that mean? Many of you are facing personal challenges in life, you know, the ongoing challenges of family life and work life and, you know, the larger concerns of social, political, environmental, climate. So there's a lot that the nervous system's trying to metabolize, and it's not that hard to exceed our threshold of tolerance. And one of the things that can happen around overwhelm is that even the practice of metta or compassion feels like too much. Like the direct practice isn't a comfort. It feels like work, or the heart feels inaccessible. And when that happens, and this may or may not resonate for all of you, but I'm offering it as another potential piece of the roadmap of how do we work with our practice and with our nervous systems so that we can stay engaged in the world. And in that zone of curiosity, often we're not very curious about the practice of kindness. I had a student recently name, or encapsulate this in a phrase that really resonated for me of they called it resiliency fatigue, which I just really loved. It was like, oh, that's brilliant. And, you know, it's like, it takes a lot to stay, to keep showing up. And so in these moments, it's often really helpful to simplify. And there is an element of complexity in all of the formal heart practices. And so one of the places we can rest back into in our practice is that first foundation of mindfulness, which is the body. Body practices, which include the breath, include things like the body scan, include walking meditation, includes the five senses. And so that's where I was pointing in the practice today to some of our sense gates, because sensing is happening anyway. We're not adding in a phrase. We're not adding in this cultivation of the heart. We're resting back and attuning to something that's already there. Not that that doesn't require some energy of where to direct our attention, but it's often can have a quality of restfulness and ease. It also can be quite grounding for a nervous system that's activated because of trauma or loss, which I know has been an ongoing experience for many of the folks that I've been sitting with in the wake of what happened at King Soopers and how that may stir up previous traumas and losses. So the five senses can be a really helpful anchor, in part because, you know, there's a simplicity to it. There is also a spaciousness to these practices. You know, sometimes being directly in the body through sensations or through the breath is actually not very grounding for people because strong emotions tend to express in the body. So working with the sense gates widens the view, and it's still a body-based experience, hearing or seeing, but you're not in the body close to emotions in the same way. So for those reasons, these practices can actually be profoundly compassionate because you're making an adjustment to your practice. And there's an inherent kindness in just the presence of being aware, of attending to. And so we traveled through attuning to vision. And if you're really overwhelmed and dysregulated, just seeing colors and shapes and naming and noticing what's in your environment can begin to settle the nervous system. Likewise, you can engage in hearing meditation, eyes open or eyes closed, which also can be grounding. And we can settle, you know, we can settle. And we also, the other way, the last ingredient of how this can be stabilizing is that it is enough of a little tiny bit of a mental activity, you know, to be perceiving. Sometimes we get really caught up in the mental activity, which was where I was inviting, as you continued to practice, to rest back and maybe not get so interested in the labels or the descriptions or the thinking part that comes with sensing. But that initial sort of thinking part often settles the emotionally activated nervous system. And then the mind can kind of soften and let go of that to just come more and more into presence. So I'll pause there and offer you a little time together in breakout rooms. And I would invite you to check in whatever way feels supportive. It might be sharing how you're doing, you know, with what's going on in the world and how your practice is supporting you. It might be speaking to you. How does working with the sense gates support you? And how might that feel compassionate? So I will set up our breakout rooms and give you a little time, and we'll go ahead and do about 6 minutes or so, and, you know, when I close them, you'll get that one final minute. So enjoy each other's company. Welcome back, friends. I'm curious if there's anything that might want to be shared about what you explored or discovered or you're experiencing. Karen. Thank you, Karen. And maybe we could actually just take a few breaths to hold her in our heart and all who loved her, including knew and loved her, including you. Precious, precious life. Yeah, such a poignant reminder of, yeah, this is why we tend these hearts of ours, for all the complexity, yeah, for all the complexity of this journey. So, anything else that wants to be, shared. Well, I might share a poem in the spirit of that, that maybe you can carry with you to support you both in terms of the re-regulation and the tenderness even of this recent loss as really the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows live side by side. And it's a poem entitled The Tide is High by Rosemary Wetola Tromer. Something about the unsinkable reggae beat, and in just three notes, I'm again my young self, dancing alone in my bedroom, singing as if I am one with the song, as if it were written just for me. I'm not the kind of girl who gives up just like that. Oh no, oh. And singing it now on a Sunday afternoon, I'm caught in a surprise riptide of joy and start to lilt around the room, though just moments ago I was weeping, buried beneath the salt of worry. But here I am, dancing alone, hips rocking, my shoulders a rolling sea, my voice surfing above the bright swell of trumpets. The tide is high, but I'm holding on. Sometimes a song is a lifeline, not because it pulls me out of the water, but because it tosses me deeper in. And I feel I'm no longer trapping myself in a life the size of a teacup. No, in this moment, I am oceanic. An Atlantic of joy, a Pacific of wonder, vast enough to hold everything. And the tide is high, and all that salt only makes me more buoyant as I play in the generous waves. So this week, you might play formally or informally with sound. Sound is a support in those difficult moments as a way of grounding. And I like where this poem also points us in terms of informal practice, that music, a song, can transport us, it can expand the heart, the heart can resonate with it when it needs to cry, or it needs to laugh, or to be held. And, the referencing of joy in the poem, there it is, sorrows and joys. And I know that James Baraz, who teaches the Awakening Joy course, often points to singing as a joy practice. Sing in the shower, sing to your pets, sing to yourself. So, sound is, and as we talked about last week, keening, wailing, sound is part of our healing and our humanity. So see what you discover, and we'll see where we go next time. And take such good care of your beautiful hearts as ever. It's lovely to be with you.